Any team that's tested AI tools for data has seen the pattern already. AI gives a different number than your BI tool. Metrics don't match across teams. And inevitably, users lose trust. It turns out, turning on AI is easy, but making it work on data is not. Hex AI was built to solve this. The key is nailing context. Hex is built to unify and curate your data context for agents. Data teams can observe, govern, and continuously improve every AI answer, so answers get smarter the more your team asks. The result? Your entire organization asks data questions in natural language and trusts the answers. Not because the AI got lucky, because it knows your business and its data. Because that's what an AI analytics platform should do. Join data teams from Cursor, Lovable, Ramp, AWS, and over 2,000 more at hex.ai.
Hey, it's Cole Swindell. After I give everything I've got to land a perfect vocal, I usually take 5 before jumping into the next track. And I've learned exactly how to recharge in that time. Some folks grab coffee. I hit a quick good luck spin. Next thing you know, the break is just as fun as laying down the track. A better break makes for a better take. Need a break? Less chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNC supply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
And a good Wednesday morning to you. Welcome into Darren Donick and Jace and No D-Base. Tomorrow and Friday, he'll join us. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, Elijah Campbell, Hillside Medical, Game Studio on this gorgeous day here in Music City. I think it's going to be 80, maybe 82. But maybe have some storms rolling in later this afternoon or this evening. I know, thumbs down, Elijah. I get it. It's not my forecast. I would have 82 and beautiful. No wind, the birds chirping, but I don't make the forecast. I'm just telling you what they're telling me.
Don't know if my poor yard can handle it.
I'm the middleman. I'm just telling you, they're saying some heavy stuff could come through later tonight, so just be cognizant of that. We've got a great show, as always. We're going to talk to Kansas play-by-play guy at 10:30, Brian Haney. Talk about the Jayhawks in the Final Four yet again. Of course, they'll be taking on Villanova. We'll do that at 10:30. Jason Cole at 11 o'clock. Talk about some of the new NFL rules. Talk NFL with him. He's been covering the league for a very, very, very long time. Robbie Stanley, who you just heard, who I told him before the show, my son had a bone to pick with him from something he said this morning, but we got that all cleared up. And now I'll have to relay Robbie's message to Maddox. So, and Robbie's right. I mean, it's all been cleared up. And then Chris Mason at 1 o'clock. Predators win 4-1 over the Senators last night. Next up, first game in the month of April. That'll be Friday night in Buffalo. You can go there and check out the new stadium. Oh, wait a minute. It's not built yet. Or I don't think they've even stuck a shovel in the ground.
Yeah, I don't know. It's the stadium's a little bit away from downtown, so I've never even seen the existing stadium.
Honestly,
never been there.
I haven't looked.
I've driven by it in the distance, but I've never been on the grounds.
Is this
what's
supposed to be in Orchard Park still? I mean,
I don't know.
I didn't even look at the location.
I assume
Orchard Park is out in the middle of nowhere. If you haven't been,
yeah,
in the middle of nowhere. I haven't been in a long time, unless it's been built up since the last time I was there. But it was out in the middle of nowhere last time. I suspect
we would need to consult our Buffalo expert.
We
Pete
have
Weber.
People that can, yeah, that can fill us in, can fill in the gaps.
My experience with Buffalo is simply the downtown area, and then driving past Niagara Falls up to St. Catharines, Ontario, on the other side of the border, where I spent a summer hitting 216 and ending my minor league baseball career.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if it ended it. You ended it. Did it really end? Did baseball end your career, or did you end it?
Baseball ended it. I got the phone
really?
Call. Really? Oh, yeah. I didn't walk away.
No, I know, but you couldn't have latched on somewhere
else? Oh, you know, I
probably... Hey, I feel like I got 230 in me. Give me a chance.
I could have. Well, you know what? In all seriousness, I thought I should try to pitch. That was what I thought about doing, but I turned the page. the budding radio career.
I mean, it's all worked out. We can laugh about it now, but yeah. It sounds like you have a little bit in you that says.
I always wonder. I wonder like to, if I'd have really given it one
shot.
Where
would it have really gone?
Yeah, maybe I could have gotten to double A. I don't know.
Well, I mean, hey, you never know.
We'll never know.
Yeah, we're right. We'll never know. It's a good point. I have heard through the grapevine. I've got a pretty good source on this that if you do want to get caught up on all things Buffalo when you go, that the Webbers will be running tours. So yeah, I don't know if you're on the schedule yet, but get on the schedule because apparently there will be some tours. So you can get caught up on everything. All the things you couldn't answer when I was throwing stuff at you just now, you can answer before the game on Friday night.
Oh, yes.
If you sign up for the Weber Tour.
I will do a thorough investigation when we arrive in Buffalo on Thursday.
Okay. Overall thoughts on last night's 4-1 victory?
It's a theme of the week, playing these teams that are loose, nothing to play for other than, you know, trying to spoil teams and steal points from teams that need them badly. And Nashville flat out didn't play very well, particularly in the first period and a half. But they were bailed out by a great performance by UC Saros. They were opportunistic. I still am not quite sure, Darren, how that puck on the penalty kill got stuck in the pizza slice. I don't know if there was some extra sauce or extra cheese or something.
Maybe some pepperonis. I need to turn my mic on.
Maybe there was I don't know what kind of English
rather
Matias Ekholm put on that thing.
Some pepperonis. Or I could just do this. That's better.
But I thought the play of the game that got Nashville out of a hole. Remember, they're down 1-0. They had a parade to the penalty box. 5 penalties in the first period. Mm-hmm. 5. 0 for Ottawa.
It was a bit much.
Now, just like every night when this happens, we're some
hard hitting stuff right here.
Were some of them tic-tac, debatable? Sure. But at the end of the day, it's 5.
Yeah, delay of games are not.
That's not debatable.
They're not debatable.
Yeah. So they are really on the ropes. 7 minutes out of 20, they're on the penalty kill. Mm-hmm. They're down 1-0, final minute of the first period. The puck gets cleared into the corner. Remember, the goalie cannot go into the corner. Chris Mason's been – ironically, saying this rule should be just, you know, why even have this?
Agreed. Well, yeah. Why? Why is that? We can talk about it with Chris today. Why do they have that rule? It doesn't.
Well,
what's
there's a reason.
The sense behind it?
The reason why is the goalies were getting too good at jumping out of the net, grabbing the dump in, and shooting it back out.
Okay. Is there a problem with that?
Well, it was taking away goals. The scoring was not where they wanted it. So they wanted a way to skillfully play the puck into the corner where the goalie couldn't play it. The offense maybe could get the puck back and thus create more scoring chances. This rule was put in when there was a lot of 2-1 games. This was when New Jersey was winning big. Dallas was winning big with the very tight 1-0, 2-1 kind of game. So that's the context of that. And guys like Martin Brodeur and some guys were getting really, really good.
Those days are long
jumping
gone.
Out and playing the puck and making the next pass and getting the puck out of trouble.
Check the scores on a nightly basis in the league now. Those days are long, long gone.
But as you know, most leagues don't put in rules to help defense, right? They put in rules to help offense.
It's not just a hockey thing.
So I don't think it's going to go away anytime soon. Nonetheless, much to the chagrin of Chris Mason and other goalies, the puck was coming around the corner, and 99 times out of 100, it's going to come into the trapezoid.
Right.
Which is the area that the goalie can play it. So Anton Forsberg's like, okay, come on. Next thing you know, the puck just stops about 6 inches from the line. He's like, oh, I got a problem here. I can't reach in there and play the puck. In retrospect, he probably should have just gone ahead and played it.
No, that's exactly where I was going. It's like Roman Josi. Like, you have to make a split-second decision.
Yeah.
Okay, you're probably now you're screwed. You might as well just go on and
take the penalty.
Because
then it would be a 4-on-4, and then you'd have to kill off a power play, but that's a better result in retrospect.
Right. Yes. Okay.
But he decided, oh, I'll just scramble back.
Yeah, bad move.
And Michael McCarron, who's got, you know, that
6'9".
Yeah, he's got the longest arms on the team, right? And so he's got the reach. He grabs the puck, skates around the back of the net, and stuffs it in barely. You know, if he gets there a half second later, it's a save.
No, he is Hal Gill's. He's about Hal Gill's size, right?
Oh, yeah. I think if he's, you know, if he's a little shorter, he may not get there. But he was able to do it, and it ties the game. And all of a sudden, you're like, hey, that was a nightmare period, and it's tied. So you feel a lot better. It didn't get a whole lot better in the second period, but Michael McCarron scores a second goal. UC Saros makes a save on a 2-on-0.
A penalty
shot. Another 2-on-1,
well,
which was a great.
Was after
and then the penalty shot. Shorthanded, and somehow you're ahead 2-1. And then they played a good third period, I thought, to pull away at the end. They got the big goal from Janot, empty net goal. So the 4-1, again, you look at the score 4-1, you don't look at the story of the game, you're like, oh, Nashville took care of Ottawa. And that wasn't easy at all, but you take it every time.
Something,
right?
Hal Gill said last night in postgame that I thought was interesting, because I asked him, I did my own hashtag Ask Hal, and he's like, you don't have to do that. You can just ask me.
He got a little rattled on the Ask Hal.
He really did. Last night was good. The you know, the questions put him on the hot seat.
He was scrambling.
They were not layups.
No.
They made him think.
Hard-hitting questions.
Made him think, and he was very uncomfortable with that. I said, you know, here of late, starts have not been good.
Now, not at all.
Some of them, they found a way, like last night. And Philadelphia and Anaheim. I mean, they were able to pull through and come out with 2 points, right. And nobody cares.
They've given up the first goal, 5 straight games and 6 out of 7.
But honestly, in most of those cases, giving up the first goal was lucky, right? Like Anaheim, it felt like they could have easily been down 3-4-0.
Oh yeah,
very lucky to be down. That probably played into why they were able to come back and win. Philadelphia, they got down 2-0. But I asked him, I said, these starts, how do you could talk about it, but how do you truly change it? And Hal brought up a really good point. He's like, well, you know, this is game 67 of the season. You don't, you know, they do scout teams. And at this point, you're coming down the backstretch of the regular season. You're going into the final month. The book is out on what the Predators. So teams are adjusting. You don't think they're not talking about the Predators' forecheck? You don't think they're not talking about, you know, what we were just talking about, dumping it in the zone, chasing it down and out-physicaling you and imposing their will on you? You don't think they're not talking about that stuff? And so I did think that was interesting, because I wonder if the starts will change or can change. So let's talk about that on the other side. And I also want to ask you about Tanner Janot. With the season that he's having, is it time to start thinking about him in a different role? And you're like, what are you talking about? I'll tell you on the other side here on the DDC, ESPN 102.5 The Game. You can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook every single day. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. All right, let's start with the starts. Is that redundant? I don't know. Can it change? If the book is out, they're going into game 68, 15 games remaining in Buffalo Friday night.
One month.
Hal says book is out. I mean, every team does this in the league. Everybody figures out everybody's tendency. They do it with teams and players, right? Just like we talk about in football, basketball. Baseball, everybody, that's their job. They have people on staffs to figure out and do their homework on tendencies of teams and players. So the book is out. Everybody knows what the Predators are doing. So with that being said, they go into the game trying to avoid letting the Predators impose their will, do what the Predators way that we've been talking about. So can they truly change the starts, or is this what it is? And you have to wear them down. Like, for example, that Tanner Janot goal, that was what the Predators do, right? But it was 2.5 periods into the game. So was it as the game goes along, they start wearing you down? But early on, they can be sharp in those spots, right? But over the course of a game, they're maybe not as eager to go in the corners. They're not as eager to get blown up by Tanner Janot if Mark Borowiecki's playing or, you know, whatever. Nick Cousins is under somebody's skin. And so that it plays out. So can you change the starts?
Well, first, Hal is right that everybody knows how the Predators play now. It's not a secret
anymore. Do you
think
that was a good hashtag Ask Hal question?
Yes, it was. But I think it's true now of everybody's team. Like, I think by this time, you really know what you're going to get. Like, we talked yesterday. I hadn't seen Ottawa play all year.
You haven't been watching Senators games? What?
And I don't think I watched them play a single game last year.
I'm pretty sure if the Sens were on or Nickelodeon was on, I'd probably watch somebody get slimed before I'd watch an Ottawa game.
Right. So now there's a case of...
Although I love Austin Watson.
There's a case of me as the play-by-play guy. You know, the Predators had not played them since February of 2020.
It's been over 2 years.
Yeah. So I asked some extra questions about them yesterday morning. I was like, look, tell me about some of these guys. How do they play? And they do have a very unique way of playing. They've got a different setup, a 1-1-3 or something. Some of the things that I don't have all the nuance with, but it was real valuable information for Hal and Mace. You know, that's the kind of stuff that is important when you play. And, you know, how do they go about it? They're young. They're fast. Do they have flaws? Yeah, they're not going to the playoffs, but they can beat you if you're not ready to play. But I think that's the kind of thing. You know what you're getting with every team by now. There's no surprises. That having been said, Darren, I think the start thing is a thing that can it can be a trend, and then suddenly it's not a trend. For example, for the season, Nashville has outscored the opposition by 11 goals in the first period.
In the first period? Interesting.
So they've been a pretty good first period team on the whole, just not
the last
not
two
lately.
Weeks have been in particular.
Yes,
the starts have not been
not
good.
Been good. Now the quickest way to get yourself in trouble is to go take three penalties.
I'm trying to
in the first four minutes.
That's, five penalties in a period. Maybe we know that's not a good game plan. But
even in games where that hasn't
that
happened,
out of it.
Yeah, even when that hasn't happened, they've had some rough
starts.
First period. Now they've had some good ones over the course of the year. Otherwise, they wouldn't be 62-51. On the good side for the first period. So I don't know what it is. I think some of it becomes mental, right? You walk out there and you go, man, we've been getting off some bad starts. Let's get off to a good start. And then something bad happens. Oh, man, here we go again. I don't know what
really?
It is. I don't know.
Hmm.
Sometimes I think you think about it too much. There's we can cite examples. I think the power play has become a mental thing in the past, and they've obviously shed
that.
Oh,
100% agree.
We're going on the power play. Oh,
well,
we haven't had much
not?
Success on
when
the power
people
play.
People groan at home, you don't think the players don't feel that?
Right.
Power play.
So I think there's some mental weight
sure.
that you feel sometimes.
There was
1 year, I can't remember, they had the weirdest time in the second period.
Yeah.
Right? You look at the, it's like, what's going on in the second period? Is it long? You come up with all these theories. Yeah. Is it the long change? Like,
this is where we get into stats a little too much.
Yeah.
Like, we're breaking down periods and like, is this a trend? Well, oh my gosh, what is it about? And look, it was so bad. Remember, we were asking the players and the players were like, I have no idea.
Exactly.
They have no clue how to answer that.
The worst was Peter Laviolette because he had no time for those questions.
Yeah.
He would get so annoyed because he would sit there and you could say with him, you could feel it without him saying it. Now he would tell us when we would ask him in private the same thing. He would maybe just expound a little more, but his eyes would roll, and he would give the stock answer. Look, we want to score first. It's not like we're coming out there saying let's get off to a bad start. You know, he just had his
of course, and that's
he's like if we could fix it,
it's
we
a
would.
Fair.
Remember
answer.
The Saturday night thing? They couldn't win on Saturday night for all that's like. And you ask Peter Laviolette, hey, what's going on Saturday? And he goes, look, we tried. It's not like we're preparing differently. He said, and we've talked about it. He said, we've tried meeting different times. We've tried shaking up the routine. Whatever. We don't know. Like, Barry Trotz's answer was always the magic pills. He was like, look, if I had the magic pills to figure out why we're having bad starts, then I would just grab the magic pills and I would retire from coaching and I would just sell the magic pills
and
to
I would
everybody.
Buy some.
Yeah.
I'd stand in line for Barry's pills. Okay, so this is maybe just something that hey it'll
I think
either
it's
work
its itself
way out,
yeah. out
or it's not. I mean, it may not. I mean, who knows? But it's either going to work its way out or not. All right, I want to get to the other one.
All right,
okay, and this really came up when I saw what's happened in Colorado, and I haven't looked today to see if there's any new news. Their last night's game, the game before against Minnesota. I don't remember. I think it was Ranton, and somebody got run. Or Landis Scott. One of them got run. And it was McKinnon who jumped in first to fight Dumba. Well, guess what? McKinnon was in the box, and he had a big old bag of ice on his hand, and it did not look good. Yesterday before the game, he was ruled out. The coach was asked, what's your level of concern for Nathan McKinnon? His answer was one word, high.
Oof.
McKinnon didn't play last night, and there is speculation. Did he break his hand in that fight? That's speculation. No idea. The point of this conversation is Tanner Janot comparable to Nathan McKinnon? No, I'm certainly not going there. Tanner Janot has had an unbelievable rookie season. Tanner Janot is a big part of what they do and their offense and the scoring. He's got 23 goals on the season. Has it reached the point where Tanner Janot, because look, there's a school that I think it's pretty divided. I don't know. It depends on who you ask. Nathan McKinnon, hey, he earns the respect of his teammates. Well, his teammates probably already respect him, but hey, you can get even more props by doing something like that. You're a leader. Look at you. You're not waiting for somebody else. And then there's a whole other school of group of people going, dude, you're a superstar. You guys are in first place. You're coming down the backstretch of your season, and you're in there fighting Dumba? What are you doing? Why would you risk everything we've done? Tanner Janot is no stranger to fights.
Oh, yeah.
He leads the NHL in fighting majors. Is it time for Tanner Janot to back off from the fights because he's earned the right to be, because he's too critical to what they're doing? Because there are teams that'll send a guy out there. They don't care if they lose him for 5 minutes.
Right.
But guess what? It's not a good swap for the Predators. Scrub in the box for 5 minutes, Janot in the box for 5 minutes. Is it time? Well, you have that talk
question.
Hey, we maybe need you to pick your spots, and it better be a really good reason. Pick your spots. Basically, stop fighting everybody. Everybody wants to fight. Stop fighting everybody. Need you on the ice.
I think that's a great question for Hal and Mace. Was that an ask Hal last night?
No, I didn't even ask that last night.
Okay, that needs to be ask Hal, a hashtag. My opinion right now is I would let it roll. But I will tell you, and I'll guarantee you everybody has the same feeling. When I see him with the ice on the knuckles after a fight.
Which was
a fight
after Hotson. That's what he was doing.
And then he came in and scored the goal.
But
you do have that fear, especially with visors and things. You're throwing these blows, and you know he wouldn't be the first if McKinnon actually did injure his hand. There's been many of those over the years that sidelines you for a while. Right now, I think it's too much of the makeup of the team, what he does. I think in the future, though, that has to be talked about. I don't know if you would do it midstream this year. I just think it's too much of a part of who they are, is him sort of leading the way in that category. But I do think it's a strategy of, hey, go ahead. You want to go with Janot? Good. Take him out of there for 5 minutes. He's got 23 goals.
What if he's out for four weeks?
Well, that's the big fear, right? But even within the game that you just said, exchanging 5 minutes for one of your guys that plays on the fourth line and isn't a big part of what you do, and then Tanner Janot going in the box for 5 minutes?
When Bednar says, what's your level of concern for McKinnon? High?
Well, that's a whole different thing.
Can you imagine McKinnon if he misses a month?
Well, for them, not a big deal.
Well, I mean, come on. I mean, they're still McKinnon.
They beat Calgary last night.
I know, without him. I know. On the road, too.
Yeah. Right?
We'll continue the discussion. There's no doubt this is not going to go away. I'd like to hear more on it because I do think it's something that's worth discussing. We'll come back, talk to Kansas play-by-play man. Can the Jayhawks get it done? Can they be playing on Monday night? We'll find out next. All right, down to four teams. All the action begins Saturday night in New Orleans. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick here on the DDC. Brian Haney, Kansas play-by-play man, who was busy in the second half last Sunday against Miami, Florida, calling a lot of buckets because the Jayhawks just took over the game.
Is there anything more fun as an announcer when you just see the takeover happen and you get to call it?
Like, at what point did you go, Brian, you know, privately or during a break, like, holy crap, did this game change in a hurry?
Man, I think it was probably at the under 16 minute media timeout. We're talking about maybe seeing the best start we could possibly see on both ends of the floor, and it wound up being the best half of basketball that Kansas has played all year. They outscore the Canes 47-15 in the final 20 minutes, and this has not been a dominant Kansas team, even in a season in which they earn a one seed for Bill Self for the 10th time, if you include 2020 when the tournament was canceled. This was not a team that on a regular basis blew other teams out. A lot of times they had to eke it out, grind it out, and yet we saw them put it all together, turn defense into offense, wear down Miami, who was not a deep team, with our up-tempo as one of the best transition offenses in the country, get rip and runs where you're running off of their mistakes and scoring quickly on the other end. And then finally, the three-pointers started to fall because, to your point, we didn't hit a single three in the first half. We were miserable from the free-throw line. We give up a 9-2 run in the last 4 minutes of the first half and looked about as vulnerable as we have all tournament. And then you finally see Kansas flex a little bit. And that version of Kansas where Ochai Agbaji, the first-team All-American, is shooting and scoring it confidently because he'd been in a slump the last 3 weeks. That version of Kansas where David McCormick is providing a real presence inside. And then you add in Remy Martin, who's really been the story of this March Madness run, the Arizona State transfer that was the preseason Big 12 Player of the Year, only to have 4 months of injuries and frustration and rumors of is he leaving and all this stuff, to now be shining when the lights are the brightest and the stage is the biggest. That's the version of Kansas that can beat any team in the country. And we'll let folks continue to write about Coach K's swan song and put all the hype on Carolina Duke that they want, because it's not often as a one seed and the last one seed still standing that you get to fly under the radar as much as Kansas is right now. So they welcome that, and hopefully they can bottle that second half effort up, because if so, this looks like the team to beat.
Brian, I renamed my bracket trash. I put it in the trash folder. I got duped, and I told this, we had Duke's play-by-play guy on yesterday. I told him I got duped by them because I watched them against North Carolina in the final game of the regular season, get trounced at home in Coach K's final home game. I saw them lose to Virginia Tech, and I was like, yeah, it's just not going to happen. I get it, all the magic, and it's not going to happen. I watched some of your guys' games. I watched the Kentucky game. I watched a couple other games, and I'm like, what you just said is exactly what I was thinking when I was picking. I've watched a lot of good Kansas teams over the years. This is not one of them, like, great Kansas teams. I was like, yeah, not going to pick them to go, you know, to the Final Four, go this far. So, yeah, didn't have Kansas in the Final Four, and here they sit.
Isn't that wild? I think realistically, if we spoke constructively and honestly, in 19 years of Bill Self basketball, this is maybe the ninth or tenth most talented team he's had. But as we found out the hard way as Kansas fans over the years, and Kentucky fans, Carolina, Duke fans, they've all got their own sob stories too. This format does not often reward the best team in the country. It rewards the team that catches fire at the right time and catches some breaks. And Kansas has had a lot of breaks come its way to kind of open up this path to the Final Four. But now you have to go out and seize it. And that's not to say they've been more lucky than good. It means they've been both really good and fortunate. And sometimes that's the winning formula. I could name five Kansas teams in the last 30 years that were the best team in the country heading in, but didn't even scratch the Final Four. And that's just the cold, harsh reality of this format where it's one and done. And if you run into the wrong matchup or you get a key injury at the wrong time, sayonara. You know, Kentucky fans can say the same thing. So for this Jayhawk team, you're absolutely right. I mean, let's put it in perspective like this. The last time they won the national title in 2008, if you looked at the big man depth chart, their number four big, Cole Aldrich, was still a lottery pick. This team has 1.5 bigs, and the one starter probably plays well one out of every three games. I mean, it's really been that inconsistent in the post. This is not anywhere close to Bill Self's most talented team. Now, it is his best collection of wing talent. he's ever had. Ochai Agbaji, Christian Brown, Jalen Wilson, these guys are tremendous. And back in the month of December, Agbaji and Brown each averaged 20 points per game for a full month. First time a duo had done that at Kansas since a couple of guys named Rafe LaFrance and Paul Pierce, who obviously were both top 10 NBA draft picks, and Pierce, the first ballot Hall of Famer. So, you know, this is rare air to be doing some of the things that Agbaji, Brown, and Wilson have done. But really, as I said, the thing that's taken this Kansas team to a whole different stratosphere in terms of trajectory and optimal potential of what they could be is the emergence of Remy Martin. Dealt with three different injuries. It was a back, it was an ankle, and then most famously, it was a knee injury that cost him the better part of 9 weeks. They sat him for a full month of inactivity at one point, but it was a 9-week recovery, and it was frustrating because you guys have watched as much Kansas basketball as you mentioned in that question. Bill Self normally recruits tough guys, guys that play through stuff. It's just their mentality. That was the way he coached him at Tulsa, Illinois, now at Kansas. And the portal doesn't give you a chance to really get to know kids a whole lot because it's a pretty quick courtship and it's a fast marriage and they learn the system quickly and they're here and gone in the blink of an eye. He was not the typical tough guy that Bill Self recruits, but it doesn't mean he's not a good fit for this team. Doesn't mean he's not a great kid. It just meant with a bone bruise where the recovery time is anywhere between 2 weeks and 10 weeks, they really didn't know when they were going to get the best version of Remy back, if they were going to get him at all. And there was a stretch in about week 3 or 4 where there were rumors that Remy was unhappy and he was going to leave and all this stuff. And that was never the case. He was frustrated with the injury. But my point is, this guy was preseason Big 12 player of the year. This guy was a first-team all-Pac 12 player a season ago that averaged 21.5 points per game for Arizona State in league play. And he gave Kansas next to nothing for the first 4.5 months of the season. Now you add him playing at the true level that we know he's capable of, and I ask you the question, guys, who else in the country added a player like that right as the postseason began, a player that can impact and change the game in so many ways? And so that addition, that shot in the arm by the kid they're calling Remy Martin, has been the biggest difference maker of any on this Kansas team amidst this run.
No question, a big difference maker. Brian Haney is with us. He is calling the game for the Kansas Jayhawks in the Final Four. And I love the Rafe LaFrance reference. That just put me in the time machine going back to the day there. That was good stuff. Brian, let me throw this at you. I mean, you start listing the storied programs, the consistent winners. Kansas and Villanova are on that list, at least in recent history for sure. Has there been any matchups recently that you can throw out there between, you know, Jay Wright versus Bill Self? What's the history there, if any?
Man, this is going to be the only time you guys get me on the show. Are you setting me up to go down memory lane in a painful way? Yes, there's several, and I hate to bring them up, but he's had our number, and I know you know that, but you're just tactfully trying to set it up for me without saying, yeah, he's owned you guys. But yes, it was 2016 in the Elite Eight when Kansas should have advanced to the Final Four. Controversial call at the end of the game with Devontae Graham diving for a loose ball. He's now with the Pelicans, by the way. And that was strike one of Jay Wright dashing our hopes. And guess what? They went on to win the national title. Then 2018, national semifinal game at the Final Four in San Antonio. It's Kansas versus Nova. It's you know, a battle of the blue bloods where it's a pick'em game on paper. But they come out in the first 5 minutes, guys, and it's 21-3. At the first media timeout. They set the record for most threes made in a Final Four game by halftime. All right? I mean, it was an onslaught like I've never seen and broke our hearts. I mean, the game was literally over at the 15-minute mark of the first half. And then, of course, they got us in the most recent regular season meeting up in Philadelphia. So I know you were being polite and making me say it, not you, so it didn't sound like you were raining on our parade. But Jay Wright has had our number. He absolutely has. And so this is a matchup where with the loss of Moore in the backcourt for them, their best perimeter defender, second-best scorer, Kansas is the clear favorite on Saturday night. But when you throw in the Jay Wright factor and what a brilliant coach he is, their ability to lock you up defensively, they're the best free throw shooting team in the country, there's a lot of ways they could muck up this game in terms of slowing it down, making it ugly. taking Kansas out of their transition offense and keeping it close. And if they do that, then you start to think back to history and how they've had our number in some recent years. But when Bill Self did win his one national title at Kansas, they beat Villanova along the road to the Final Four. It was up in Detroit in a Sweet 16 matchup. And so we like to go back to those memories, if you don't mind, not the most recent ones, because the most recent ones are not fun.
Brian, I predicted yesterday on the show that it would be Kansas and Duke in the national championship. If you guys punch your ticket and you're playing on Monday, we'd love to have you on Monday to preview. It'd be fun. Maybe we'll get D-Mace on here and you can tell him about what he did for you in fantasy football over the years.
That's right. I was telling your producer off the air that I said yes to this because Derek Mason won me many a fantasy football title. I felt like I owed him something. But Darren and Willie, you guys have been fun too. So I'd love to come on if we can carve out 5 minutes on Monday.
Yeah.
Hopefully we're in that position, my man.
No doubt.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on. And yeah, there's a lot of self-Coach K history we can talk about too. So
let's
hope it's either that or Kansas, Carolina. Because after all, the guy that made Kansas, or rather Carolina basketball, what it is today, Dean Smith, is a Topeka native and a KU graduate from the 1952 Kansas National Championship team. So I want to throw that out there for the Carolina fans in the audience, that it all comes back to Lawrence, Kansas, baby. So whether it's Kansas Duke or Kansas Carolina, if we're lucky enough to still be standing on Monday, there's going to be a lot of great storylines on the tradition that's colliding on college basketball's biggest night.
Enjoy your time in New Orleans. Best of luck, and hopefully we'll talk to you on Monday.
All right. Sounds good, guys. Take care.
All right. That is Brian Haney, Kansas play-by-play man. That was fun. We'll come back, wrap up the first hour. Jason Cole to begin the second hour here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We got a chance for you, your last chance, to get into another bracket challenge. Yes, down to four teams. This is more my style. I've lost all the other bracket challenges. Why not one with just four teams left? Go to thegamenashville.com/bracket challenge. To play for a chance to win a pair of tickets to see Shinedown, woo, Bridgestone Arena, May 4th. Game Bracket Challenge is brought to you by Coach's Corner Sports Grill in Spring Hill, Days Delta 8, and Wager, which also did not do well last night. The listeners were taking my money on Wager. Did not fare well. I decided to dabble in the NBA. That was a mistake. I don't watch enough NBA. That was a mistake. Loser. Loser. Loser and loser. All right. Loyard down to four teams. Good stuff from Brian Haney.
He was
Kansas
good.
Play-by-play guy. Last
I
time
love
they
the history.
Won, yeah. 2008. Last time the Jayhawks won. I remember it well because speaking of brackets, I'll tie this in. Not that anyone cares, but I do. In 08, I was in the biggest bracket challenge I've ever been in. I decided to dabble in one, let's just say, where maybe the pros go, right? Where people that take this stuff really serious, it's a pretty good little buy-in. By the way, speaking of those buy-ins to brackets that may come up, and you just made the list on Friday, as Willie smiles. Well, you know, we walked out of the arena yesterday. We're going to have a little fun with that.
Oh, we're going to have a lot of fun with that.
I was set, so the pot was quite large, just going to be honest. I was set to win it. And boy, did I feel good. I did. I felt pretty good. If Memphis, I didn't have Memphis winning at all, but the way it played out, if Memphis beats Kansas, I'm winning the bracket. Because obviously somebody was going to win it that had Kansas. They had picked Kansas. All I needed was for Memphis to hit some freaking free throws down the stretch.
And they missed a bunch.
And I would have had a lot of cash in my pocket, and I lost. I was so mad at John Calipari. I was so mad at the Memphis Tigers. I can't tell you how mad I was. In fact, I won't tell you because I won't talk about it on the air. I was fuming. I don't think I slept for 2 days. I was so mad.
The words Joey Dorsey will never leave your mouth again.
They had it in the bag. They had it. All they do is hit their damn free throws, and I win. The biggest bracket I've ever been in, and I don't even remember the circumstances on why I jumped in, why I felt frisky in 08, but I felt frisky, and I was set to win it until the Tigers could not hit free throws and lost in OT. But I digress. Like I said, none of you care. I do, though. As you can tell, I'm still burning 13, 14 years
that,
later.
That's a long time ago.
I know. But I remember it well.
What does that say about other bracket things you've been in since 2008?
I didn't have a chance like this year. It was in the trash Thursday night, first night of the tournament.
Oh, boy.
So I heard Robbie and Rex Road bring up an interesting choice. I don't know what the segment was. They were asking each other questions. Robbie was asking the questions. And I thought this one was intriguing. If you had to root for one of them to win it all in their sport, who would you root for? A, Bill Belichick. B, Little Nicky, a.k.a. Nick Saban. C, Coach K, Mike Krzyzewski. Because obviously those are pretty – those are guys that have been doing it at a high level for a very, very long time. And most people outside of those fan bases do not root for them. Fair? That's fair.
Yeah.
Right? So I thought, I was like, huh, that's a good one.
It's a good one.
And I had my ranking in my head, but I want to hear yours first. I want to hear Elijah's second, and then I'll reveal the order that I had in my head. And I want to see where we are on this, because I feel like it's a question that will, if, depending on who you ask, you'll be all over the place, right? So
yeah.
Who would you root for the most to win it all?
Out of which guys against?
Belichick.
Coach K. Oh, Belichick is in here.
Little Nicky.
Oh.
And Coach K. Right. See what I mean? As you've grown, I know. Outside of those fan bases, who's really rooting for those guys to win?
Belichick, Nick Saban, or Coach K? Who do I root for the most? I would have to say Belichick.
You would root for Belichick.
Yeah. And
why?
Only because I have so many ties to
New
England. So
this is just
to
keep peace
thing.
At home.
Yeah,
this is just much, to yeah. literally keep peace at home.
Not my home, but my extended family.
Well, but it still keeps
that
peace.
That roams all of New England.
Amongst the family.
Peace amongst the family, yes.
So this was
and
just...
And, you know, I can remember growing up... You know, I never disliked the Patriots, and I had a lot of ties up there. So it's always like pre-Belichick. I've never disliked the Patriots. It becomes a lot harder when they got into that mode. It's like the Red Sox. Being a Red Sox fan is totally different now than it was pre-2004, right? It's completely changed. Now they're like the Patriots. They're not the darlings that, oh, wouldn't it be great if the Red Sox ever won? Yep. Like, that was totally the thing in 2004. Now it's like, oh, the Red Sox won again?
Yeah. Yeah.
Boston? Another Boston team won? Oh, man. I mean, they're cocky up there now. It's a totally different thing.
No.
But still, that having been said, I still would rank Belichick one. Well, who's your one?
So you would vote Belichick one.
Yes. Not by much. I mean, this is,
Of course. Nobody's going to have a runaway in this category. Elijah.
See, I have a runaway, and that's Coach K. Because I got to go like experience the Duke thing when I was like 14. I got to be in the Cameron Crazies for one night, and it was like the coolest thing for a 14-year-old. So I've always I've never hated Duke. Like, I might be one of the only people my age that grew up watching college basketball that's not a Duke fan but doesn't hate Duke. Like, I get it. I get why people hate him. Like, I totally understand it. But I kind of like him. Like, I kind of want to see Coach K win this whole thing. I think it'd be really cool.
Okay, see, and this is why I'm asking, because it did exactly, without even knowing your answers, it did exactly what I expected to do. Just so you know, Mike Krzyzewski would be dead last for me, for sure.
Okay.
Third on the list.
Well,
hands
your
down.
Your Kentucky ties would
runaway. I mean, yeah. A runaway. There's no scenario where I would root for the man. No scenario whatsoever. Two would be Bill Belichick. What about your tournament? On to Kansas. He's out. So he's second. I'm going Little Nicky. Even though we have had our moments, we've had some weird, awkward moments where he slapped my leg.
One in particular, yeah.
But there's been a lot of – I've been around him enough now in private settings. Look, I don't always agree with everything he does. I think overall, I think he's a – I do. I would root for him. I think he's a pretty good person. I do. I know he at times he gets.
I agree. He sort of won me over.
It's a weird thing, but if you're around him, I can't explain it. Like, I don't believe he's a monster. And I know he beats the podium and he does all this stuff and he's done all these stuff over the years and can be hard to deal with. But I've been around him in private settings and I actually find him to be a pretty likable guy. I really do. Even though I told you, he slapped me on my leg.
I mean, this is recruiting propaganda, you know, from...
Right there. It's just right there. That's where he hit my leg, right there.
We had the nervous laughter. Ooh, he just slapped Aaron's leg.
He just literally smacked my leg. That was at the downtown Omni.
But my
answer is Little Nicky.
Okay, he's one for you. Okay, he's two for me. And I do think, look, I've all three are in the category of I like to see when the king gets knocked off the mountain. You know, so I tend to be that way. But Saban definitely has won me over some. I used to really get annoyed with him when he wouldn't even savor a moment sometimes. I think his wisdom has gone up since he's been it.
He's loosened up a little.
Hey, we got to start working on recruiting tomorrow.
Yeah.
Coach, you just won the national championship. Would you want to enjoy? Hey, tomorrow the work starts again for the next. I'm just like, okay, chill out. I know the process and everything. I think he looks a little more human now. But Coach K is still number three for me.
Coach K is not third. He is 433rd
okay.
On a list of 100. So there was no time I even contemplated, never even considered. That was like, okay, he's third.
Now, did you
what
ever?
You think
so you never so you never rooted for him? Like I did as a teenager, I did have a fondness for Duke. It switched when I went to Vanderbilt and became sort of a North Carolina, you know,
disciple.
Derivative, if you will. Yes. The Dean Smith derivative that you heard Mr. Haney just talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no.
The connection.
Never. Never. Come back. Jason Cole. We'll talk about the new overtime rules, some other things that are in play. Lots going on in the NFL. It has been very active. We do that to kick off second hour next.
It's 10:01 a.m. on a Monday, all at once. Your sales leader needs to know which deals are at risk. Your PM wants feature adoption by cohort. And your CFO needs one last graph for the board. Now your data team has to say no to somebody. Hex changes that. Ask any data question in plain English and get an analyst-grade response, all backed by your actual business context as defined by your data team. Start saying yes to more data questions at hex.ai.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, rechalk, still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.